This meeting of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will now come to order. Please rise for a salute to our nation's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first order of business this morning is to elect a 2010 chairman and vice chairman of the Board of Supervisors. Is there a motion? Supervisor O'Brien.
Well, I would make a motion that Vice Chair Grover becomes Chairman Grover.
Mm-hmm. You have a recommendation for vice chair?
Vice chair, if my memory serves me right, it would roll to Supervisor Monteet.
Okay. Motion's been made by Supervisor O'Brien to elect Jeff Grover to chairman and Supervisor Monteet for vice chair. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, seconded by Supervisor Chiesa. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried. 5-0.
First order of business today, I'd like to recognize Mr. DeMartini for his service as chair for us. During all of 2009 and the last quarter of 2008, Jim served us very well as chair, and during his year in office, he got us through one of the worst fiscal years that this county's ever seen, the H1N1 flu pandemic, the creation of partnerships with several cities to build a new animal shelter, the negotiation of the provider agreements for the Behavioral Health Center, the negotiations of the solar energy agreements for two solar energy sites at Gear and Fink Road landfills, the dedication of the Empire Regional Water Safety Center, and the establishment of a new physician residency consortium. Jim, if you'll come up here, I have a plaque here to commemorate that year for you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for your time in office. Do you have anything to say?
It's been a pleasure to serve as the chairman of the board, so I wish you good luck. It looks like I'll be moving farther to the right. I didn't think it'd be possible. but I will be to the left of you.
Thank you, Jim, for your time. And then we have a couple of service awards also. Supervisor O'Brien, if you'll come up, please. Why don't you hold that? Well, as all of you know, Bill represents District 1 and the cities of Waterford, Oakdale, Riverbank, and part of Modesto. He's been in office for 5 years now, and 1 year into your second term and another year, you have to start thinking about re-election again. During Bill's time in office, he's helped establish the Valley Home MAC, and he has represented the board on the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District Board and billboards. The STANCOG Executive Committee, the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance, LAFCO, and the Tuolumne Regional River Park Commission, and many other committee assignments. Bill was chair of the board in 2007, and congratulations on your 5 years, and thank you.
I don't have much to say except 5 years goes quick. I know the next three, I'm sure, will go much quicker.
Thank you, Bill. Supervisor DeMartini, if you can come back up again, please. Jim represents Patterson, Newman, Ceres, and the west side of Stanislaus County. And he's been chair for about a term and a quarter, just finished. He's helped establish the South Modesto MAC and the West Side Healthcare Task Force. And Jim represents us on numerous boards, including LAFCO, the Airport Advisory Board, EDAC, the EMS Board of Directors, the General Plan Update Committee, and his favorite, the Retirement Board. Jim, thank you for your 5 years of service.
Something more.
That brings us then on the agenda to the public comment period. And this is an opportunity for anyone to address the Board of Supervisors on an item that is not on the agenda. We have one request today, Deborah Harper. Deborah, if you would come forward.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Deborah Harper, and I reside in Modesto, California. Happy 2010, and congratulations. Sorry. I am here to read two scriptures. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak still in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
This is priceless. Is it okay if I read a couple of scriptures?
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
You have 3 or 4 minutes.
Thank you. I want to read John 3:16-17 this morning. It says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him." Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would care to address the board on non-agenda items? Seeing none, then we'll go to consider the consent calendar. We have a number of our agenda items that will be acted on with one vote. Is there anyone from the board of supervisors that would care to pull any of the consent items? Anybody from the audience? Okay, seeing none, we'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Okay, a motion?
Second.
So we have a motion from Supervisor Monteith, a second from Supervisor DeMartini. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? A motion is approved. We'll consider then item B11, which is an annual progress report for the Stanislaus County Employee Mentor Program. Mr. Boggs.
Good morning, Chairman Grover. I get to say that first.
The very first, thank you.
And members of the board, Keith Boggs, Deputy Executive Officer, Economic Development, Westside Healthcare Advisory. Good work, sir. Mm-hmm. I'm here this morning to share with you an information item regarding your employee mentor program and to ask you to recognize January 2010 as Mentor Awareness Month here in Stanislaus County, consistent with the National Mentor Awareness Month distinction. It's over these next few weeks that governments, local, state, and national, recognize the power and importance of this most valuable civic activity. Here in Stanislaus County, this month marks an impressive milestone in our local flavor of youth mentoring as our county employee mentor program turns an impressive 11 years young. This is an undeniable testimony to the employees of our county, from all employment walks, healthcare to public works, workforce assistance to General Services Agency. Our employees give back. These mentor champions give back not for monetary reward or overt public recognition, rather out of an overwhelming sense of community and community pride. So what's in the water here in Stanislaus County that has allowed this uncanny sustainability to transpire? Why here? What defines this success culture? After all, as a region, we experience many of the same struggles and hardships that other locations grapple with, and perhaps, in some instances, we may even have it a little bit tougher. Why do so many public employees find the energy and the passion to give up their lunch times, after work, weekends to spend time with a struggling third grader or academically lost fifth grader? I believe that the reasons, and there are several, are simple but noteworthy. First, our county leadership is committed to the cause. You, the County Board of Supervisors, the Stanislaus Office of Education, the local business and service groups, understand the positive social ramifications of spending quality time with young people. There's never been a hard sell, stealth marketing tactic, or political wrangle applied to reach these multiple leaderships. They simply care, and care very much. In many instances, senior leaders are themselves actively involved, a classic example of walking the talk. Number two, mentoring is addictive. Over the years, I've talked with dozens of fellow employees and partners, and to the person, they reflect a value to self more powerful than time or influence. Bottom line, mentors get more out of this experience than the students, And this wonderful epiphany fuels returning mentors and inspires a rich word-of-mouth infrastructure that helps the program thrive. Number three, the education community is on board. We're very fortunate to have committed school sites and principals that recognize the frailty of this effort. Continuously monitoring the ease and accessibility of the program so that employees experience a process that is effortless and rewarding. I have a slide presentation this morning that I've worked very, very hard on. Actually, it's a single slide. 15,356. Sort of like a Jeopardy answer. 15,356. This is the number of volunteer hours that your employees have invested on behalf of young people and communities since program inception. Over 400 county employees have been active to date. Including our community partners, that number jumps to 16,288. On Thursday evening, January 28th, all of our partners, including employees, department heads, teachers, administrators, service clubs, and business advocates, will come together to celebrate our 11th year and the beginnings of year 12. I'd like to personally invite each of you to come and participate in this movement. It will change you. In a time when governments are increasingly bashed and berated, and public sector servants stereotyped as indifferent, faceless, and paper-driven, I believe that programs like this one strikes a fairness and balance against the typical machine rant. There's a movement afoot in Stanislaus County, a movement that each of you have helped to foster, a movement by and between and among employees, education, and businesses that is commendable, worthy, simple, inexpensive, and proven. I would like to ask at this point if those mentors and site coordinators that are here this morning would stand just briefly and be recognized. This is my army, and we hope that you join us. Thank you. I love you, man. I love you, Boy Montana. This concludes my brief presentation. This is a good news item. I would be happy to answer any questions about the program, about the process, our partners, or our direction. Matt Machado, the 2009 Mentor of the Year, is prepared to accept the resolution.
Okay, before we present the resolution, are there any questions or comments from the board?
First of all, this program is, in my opinion, one of the greatest programs I've seen, if not the greatest, among the greatest. And as you stated earlier, you know, this program is a giving of themselves, each and every individual. And the relationship that's built between the mentor and the student is equal. Neither party will ever forget the other party. They become as one and they become as a family. And of all the millions of dollars that we spend every year, government spends in trying to accomplish just this, you can see that money isn't the answer. It comes from within. It's a want to. And I want to congratulate everyone involved in it and just say thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Supervisor. Anyone else? I have a couple of folks from the audience that have asked to speak. Jerry Cooper.
Good morning.
Right.
I didn't know I was going to be first. My name is Jerry Cooper. I'm with the Modesto 500 Lounge Club and serve as president. This is my second year as a mentor. And last year when I started, I thought to give up an hour of my time to do this. I didn't really want to do it, but after about the first month or so, working with a young gentleman to see him go from a little shy individual to just blossom and reading, I thought it's worth it, and I couldn't wait for the second year. So I've enjoyed the privilege of working with this young gentleman that I work with at the Shackleton School. and it's probably done more for me than anything else. I'm one of those, I didn't particularly like reading as a child myself, but now I'm able to give back, and it has encouraged me greatly. So thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. And then Michael Brady.
Good morning, I'm Michael Brady. I'm principal of Catherine Everett Elementary School. What we normally do in a week is teach and learn. One of the great things that happens, this is my fourth year at Catherine Everett. In the first year, a lot of strangers showed up on a weekly basis. About 10, 12, 14 strangers would come and meet with students. And over the years, I've come to really appreciate the work that they do with these students. Not that they make them geniuses in a year, but they do make connections. They do help them know what they're going to be learning in class in some situations, helping them with math in other situations, front-loading them with information that they're going to be covering. And there's all kinds of connections like that, but as was well said earlier, the main thing is that these students know that on these particular days, a person is going to come, an adult, and they're going to make a connection with them, and they're going to have a communication with them that they can't get anywhere else. That's all about them and that other person that makes all the sense in the world for them and helps them want to come to school. And so that's a great thing for these kids, and that's, I hope and I think, a great thing for these mentors. I appreciate your support for this.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Mr. Machado, if you'll come on up, and while you're coming, I might just acknowledge Keith, I think you probably are as much of the reason that this thing has been successful as anyone. And the enthusiasm and the energy that you infuse into it is remarkable. So thank you for your part of it.
Thank you.
Mentoring Month, and we'll present that to you. But what I'd like to know is, what did you accomplish that made you Mentor of the Year?
Okay. Well, I guess that means two stories, because I was going to share another story, too. In my first year, I had a fourth grade student that I was mentoring. And through the school year, his reading really didn't improve a whole lot. And I asked him if he'd ever had his eyes checked. And he said he thought he had, but he wasn't sure. So the school, you know, sent him through the process. And they said, no, his eyes seem to be okay. And so I kept pushing the issue, and by the end of the school year, they did discover that his eyesight was impaired, and he got reading glasses. And as soon as he got those reading glasses, the very next day, he started seeing those letters, and he started reading a lot better. And it was just really, it was great to see. It gave me a warm feeling, and he's better off for it. And then the next year, I did see him again. He still had his glasses on, and he was just a happy fifth grader at that point. So it was fun to be a part of that progress for him, and I think that was the reason I became the Mentor of the Year, and just by luck, I think, is all it was. But if I could share one more story, a week ago yesterday, I went to meet with the student that I mentored this year, a fourth grader, and as I walked into the classroom, that's typically how we do it. We just go in the classroom and grab the student, we go to the library, and we read. Well, my student was gone, and the teacher informed me that he moved away. And I was shocked. I was just standing there like, I didn't, nobody knew, you know. It was almost like the last minute that they found out he moved. So as I was going to leave the classroom, the teacher asked me, well, would you like to take another student to mentor? And I said, well, of course. And as she asked the question, about a third of the class raised their hand. They all wanted to be part of the program. And so the two things that I left with is, there's a huge need for this program. The students love it. And the other thing is that it sure felt good to be needed. And so when I walked away, and I have a new student, I'm going to meet them next Monday. And so I'm excited, and it feels good to be needed. And so it's a great program. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank all of you who are spending your time and making an effort to improve the lives of young people. And for those that might be watching, as Matt witnessed, there are many more children out there that could use your input in their lives.
And I would like to reinforce one comment that Chairman Grover just made, and that is that these mentors are spending their time. They're taking either their lunch hours or period of vacation so that they can mentor the students, taking their gas to drive to the classroom, and we're very fortunate to have supportive administration at the schools at which the mentoring occurs, but we're also very fortunate to have employees and members of the community willing to dedicate so much of their personal time to support this effort.
Okay, the next item for us to consider is the temporary suspension of academy training at the Ray Simon.
You want a motion?
I'm sorry, yes. We need a motion to approve the mentor program report.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Supervisor O'Brien, a second by Supervisor DeMartini. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Sheriff, item B12.
Good morning, Chairman Grover. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Members of the board, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Boring. Before I start, I too want to extend my congratulations to Matt Machado and Keith Boggs. You know, the Sheriff's Department's been a big part of the mentoring program since 1999, and anytime we have an opportunity to make a difference in the lives of our young people, help them make better choices, means that we're a step closer to a successful, safer, more prosperous community. So I want to offer and extend my congratulations as well. With respect to the item before you today, my comments will be brief. In essence, we continue our proactive approach to the management of our budget, making decisions in anticipation of further cuts in the next fiscal year. This is another way for us to reduce our expenses, because at this point there's no guarantee of ongoing or sustainable funding from San Joaquin Delta College. Let me also reaffirm that this is a temporary suspension of only one of several programs at the Ray Simon Regional Criminal Justice Training Center. As you can see, if you look on page 4 of your agenda item, you can see that since the inception of this program, the demand for our services has decreased, as well as the number of recruits in the class. And the most important number that I want you to pay particular attention to is the number of recruits who have gotten a job. As you can see, our most recent graduating class, there was only one recruit out of 21 who was able to find employment, and that was because that recruit happened to be part of a cadet program with the San Joaquin County Sheriff's Department. So we are looking at everything we can as far as the sheriff's budget, in an effort to reduce our expenses and to protect our front line of defense. That's our priority. We need to keep our deputy sheriffs employed and working on the street, because as you know, our crime rates are the lowest they've been in 2 decades. Our deputy sheriffs, the men and women who serve the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department, are doing a fabulous job. I'm very proud of them. They're a great team. I'm a grateful sheriff, and we need to keep them working so that we don't lose any ground on our crime rates and the success we've seen in a safe community. In essence, we will continue with our partnerships. This change does not affect our partnership with San Joaquin Delta College. It does not affect our partnership or our certifications with POST. We will continue with advanced officer training, post-mandated training, continued professional training, and our services to 8 counties, because other chiefs and sheriffs who I've had long and difficult conversations with respect to their budgetary deficits and the potential of having to reduce their levels of staffing have also been very grateful and thankful for the partnership at the Regional Training Center, because they don't have the money either. And so working together, we continue with at least the mandates and the ongoing training and the significant emphasis that we've placed on excellence in law enforcement training. So again, this is only temporary. I'm an eternal optimist. I believe that we'll be back in business, hopefully in 1-2 fiscal cycles. But there will always be a need for good quality law enforcement officers, and the services that we've provided have been recognized statewide. So with that, I am happy to answer any questions that you might have regarding our decision.
Questions for Sheriff Christensen? Doesn't look like it at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody from the audience has anything that they'd like to add or ask? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for an action.
like to make a motion to accept the five staff recommendations.
Okay. A second?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion from Supervisor Chiesa, second from Supervisor O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion's approved 5-0. Thank you. We'll consider then item C9, which is considering adopting a resolution to support the findings of the California Statewide Local Streets and Roads Needs Assessment. Mr. Machado.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. Let me get my program rolling here. And first of all, I apologize for my voice. I'm just coming off of a cold, and I feel fine, but the voice may not last. We'll see. Okay. So this morning I bring to you a statewide local streets and roads needs assessment. Oh, thank you. This was a statewide effort between the counties and all the cities. We all contributed to the effort. Los Angeles County was the lead, and they produced a really good document that I'd like to share with you this morning to give us a feel for overall streets and roads, the needs out there. So the study was intended to answer these questions. What are the conditions? How much will it cost to improve and maintain? What are safety, traffic, regulatory needs? And is there a funding shortfall? And if so, what is it? To put things in context, we can see who has most of the roads in California. 81% of California's pavements are owned by cities and counties. And additionally, if you think about everybody, the citizens of the state, every single day we use these facilities. Many days we don't use state facilities, but we always use local facilities, whether they're county or city. You can see the breakdown of the counties versus the cities. And we're not talking about just pavement. This assessment also included sidewalks, ramps, curb and gutter, drainage, lighting. To understand the study and the results, it's best to know what the assumptions were when we went into it. We looked at a 10-year analysis period. We used $2,008 as a constant. Our goal was to determine the best management practices. We did include safety, traffic, regulatory elements, which those are the sidewalk, the drainage, the lighting elements. And we did not include new streets or capital improvements. In terms of data collection, we were very successful. We received information on 93% of the state's local streets and roads. The only agencies that were not able to provide data were the very, very small agencies that either didn't have data at hand or didn't have the staff to gather the appropriate data. With such a large amount of data to check, we had to make sure that the quality was there. So we did use quality assurance processes to validate the conclusions of the report. And so, how good is the data? Well, many people use the same programs, whether it's StreetSaver, MicroPaver, there's many choices out there. Ourselves, we did develop a pavement management system in 2007 and 2008. We used the StreetSaver program. We've modified it today. We just updated the data in late 2009, and we will be bringing it forward as part of our GIS, our geographic information system, but the basis of it was the StreetSaver. That data actually will be available within just weeks of today, so I look forward to sharing that out with the group. So a little bit about pavement condition, the index that was used. It's a 0 to 100 scale. It's consistent throughout all counties and cities. We all use the same scale. And as you can see, the good versus at risk, poor, and failed with some examples. Those are not in Stanislaus County, by the way, but we certainly have roads that look very, very similar. So what's the results? Well, the statewide average, the index was 68, which puts us right at risk. This is an example of what a 68 looks like. It has cracks, it has some deterioration, noticeable deterioration, but In all, it travels fairly well. It's a fairly smooth road. And why is this result critical? Why is this information important today? Because at this point, we can still save the infrastructure. A 68 is at risk, but has not completely failed. We haven't lost grip on the entire system. How do we rate? Well, we actually rate pretty well statewide, and I think it may be even a little bit misleading, quite honestly. Our average rating today is an 88, above the state standard. But quite honestly, the past 3 years, we've had an abundance of road projects. I would almost call it a blip in the radar a little bit, because I don't believe we'll continue the same level of project delivery because of funding. As you heard me a meeting or so ago, we talked a little bit about some loss of funding for roads, LTF. State Prop 1B monies are starting to run out. Stimulus monies, one-time infusion, and we're making use of every dollar we have. We're putting it on the streets. And it's shown. Since 2007, we've resurfaced 225 miles, and that's why our rating is so high. I'm not sure we're going to be able to maintain that 88. I think we'll probably, over the years, fall back to that average, and hopefully not worse, but we'll talk a little bit more about state funding. And one other additional information, the last bullet, this coming year, 2010, we still have Prop 1B monies. We still have stimulus monies, and we're looking to deliver upwards of 200 miles this year. It's going to be a big year, even though overall funding is in jeopardy. This is still going to be a big year, so we're going to take advantage and do the best we can with the dollars that we have. A little bit about the funding source. From the state side of it, Prop 42 and the highway users tax, the gas tax, it funds the vast majority of all roadway maintenance. State Prop 1B is a sizable amount, and you can see at the bottom the double stars for us. We've spread that money out over the next three fiscal years at $2.5 million each. We're trying to spread it as far as we can to transition into essentially a new program. And some time ago I mentioned a budget strategy where we will be reducing staff to meet our funding sources when that money does run out. You can also see that the local sales tax measures across the state fund a vast amount of their maintenance. Clearly, we don't have that program, so we're at a disadvantage in that area. Some of the critical revenue streams, Prop 42, we receive about $4.5 million annually. And then the highway users tax, we receive about $8 million annually. I'd like to also mention that both of these accounts are in jeopardy these days with the state overall budget. We'll talk about that here in a second. So for 10-11, the jeopardy that I'm talking about, the state has deferred Prop 42. They've also deferred highway users tax. And the current proposal that the governor has provided, what he's detailed out is that he would like to eliminate sales tax on gas, which is Prop 42. With that elimination, he proposes to increase the excise tax, the highway users tax. The net effect, though, is a 5 cent per gallon reduction. That's a big reduction in our revenue stream. So this will certainly result in immediate and long-term reductions in revenue for roadway maintenance. And so when I mentioned the 88 number, I don't know that we can maintain that, especially with the proposal on the table by the governor to essentially eliminate Prop 42. One of the big issues with that elimination, beyond just the dollar amount that it adds up to, is the protections that we currently have with Prop 42. Currently, we have protection there where they cannot borrow more than a certain amount, and it's from our standpoint, it's livable the way it is. With the elimination of Prop 42 and the sales tax on gas, moving to an excise tax, we have no protection. They could borrow it every single year, which will decimate our road program and really public works in general. So what happens if we don't continue our funding source or actually increase it, which is what the needs assessment results in, as it shows that we really need to increase the funding? Well, if you look at over time, our 68 average will certainly go down. And the projection is by the year 2033, we will be at a 48 with our current funding sources. And as the rating goes down, the funding backlog goes up. Because as you get to a very poor level of streets, the only choices you have would be reconstruction, which is a lot more expensive than just maintaining a decent system. And so the backlog of dollars, the deficit will grow immensely. So what does this shortfall mean in exact numbers? When we look at a 10-year frame, trying to maintain what we have a shortfall of about $70 billion. Now that's a lot considering that's maintaining existing funding levels, not to mention the governor's proposal of a reduction in funding. What $71 billion represents to us today would be 38 cents per gallon increase in the gas tax, whether it's excise or sales tax. That's what that means. And that doesn't seem too doable in today's legislation at the state level. To bring it home, what is our current shortfall in Stanislaus County? We estimate it's in excess of $100 million today. And what that includes is not only our pavement maintenance, the urban or the rural roads, but it also includes our urban roads, which would be drainage needs and pedestrian needs. And if you consider the amount of need in terms of miles, we have about 1,300 centerline miles of roads that are in need of maintenance today that we haven't got to yet. And so in summary, the good news is that we received good data. We feel very good with the conclusions that the report brings forth. I think the other good news is that our statewide average is decent today. For Stanislaus County, it's very good. And the hope is that we can maintain at least a statewide average. And considering that gas is $3 per gallon today, that would tell one that the revenue source is there, unless the governor's proposal comes through. And probably the not so good news is that with the current funding sources, there's a very good chance that our rating will drop to around that 48 mark over the next 20 years. The other not so good news is that to avoid that, we need to nearly double our existing funding sources, which is going to be difficult or near impossible. And then, of course, the not so good news is the state proposal that we've talked about. So with that, I'd like to open it up to any questions that you may have.
Any questions from the board?
Yeah.
Mr. Kazel? First of all, I'm going to refer to you as Dr. Machado from here on out. The optometrist, since you're an optometrist now, too. The funding that the governor has proposed, is that excluding the fact that they can borrow, because I think that's the intent. Would it be a more stable funding source or a less stable funding source?
It would be less stable because the way the highway users tax account works is that they can borrow it every single year. And so for a number of years, we'll have zero funding, and that would be challenging. And then the repayment of it, and this is where the instability comes even further, the repayment does not include interest, and the timing factor of it is of question also. Whereas Prop 42, it comes with interest. They can only borrow it twice in 10 years. So there's a lot more known about Prop 42 borrowing versus the highway users tax.
But why is the governor proposing a net decrease in the tax? Is that to sell it to the people?
Get out of it.
In your opinion?
Get out of it. I suspect that's true, and I also suspect that long term, if they can take the sales tax out of it, there's no growth in that. With the excise, I mean, there is growth with sales tax. There's no growth with excise tax. So, from the state's perspective, that gives them more opportunity to recoup more money for, say, the general fund, because it would eliminate the spillover going to transportation, which is actually the transit. And I would like to also mention that as much as this decimates the road program, it will more greatly decimate the transit program. The governor's proposal will result in about a $3 to $4 million loss to the transit program. They currently, the STA portion comes from that same sales tax on fuels.
So I would expect CSAC and the league, they have a proposition, or ballot proposition they're talking about. That goes back to protecting Prop 42 and 1B also?
Yeah, and I do believe they even had some protections in there for the highway users tax. I'm afraid that the timing is going to be challenging because the governor's budget proposal is moving forward. The initiative is somewhat lagging behind that, I think.
Because I understood from the League of Cities when I think Jim and I had spoke, or Supervisor DeMartini and I had spoke with him, they talked about it being retroactive, the proposition. Would that not be the case?
Yeah, I don't know. Some of that may have to work itself out through the courts also.
Yeah. When I see Supervisor Monteith smirking at me, it scares me because he's been up there.
No, I don't mean it that way. It's just that all he's doing is making money available to him more easily. And then later on, for example, 42, as stated, he can only do it twice within a period of time to be paid back. He eliminates all of that completely and is able to take all the money every year if he converts it over. So it makes the money accessible where it isn't any other way. Now, let's say it's less money, but that doesn't mean that somewhere along the line he can't raise more money someplace else, not under the rules that have to be paid back. So all this does is clean the slate where he can get at the money and perhaps raise additional money and still have the accessibility. That's what it boils down to.
Okay. Anybody from the audience care to comment on this? If not...
I would note also, if I may,
yep,
that I should have pushed my button, apologies, that the other advantage to the governor and the administration of using the highway users tax is it does not go through the state general fund, so it's not subject to the Prop 98 calculations benefiting education. Gives the administration and the legislature more flexibility and more discretion in setting the funding for our local schools.
Okay. Chair will entertain a motion for approval of this report.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion from Supervisor Monteith and second Supervisor O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Yeah,
motion carries. And I will ask the maker of the motion, did that include adoption? Yes, it did. Thank you. We'll move then to correspondence.
This board has received a notice from the Central Valley Regional Water Control Board regarding the issue paper on drinking water supply and public health related issues. Proposed NPDES permit renewal for the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District Sacramento Regional Water Wastewater Treatment Plant.
Refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources, the Department of Public Works, and the Agricultural Commissioner, Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a notice from the California State Fish and Game Commission, proposed emergency regulatory action relating to the incidental take of Pacific Fisher.
Please refer this to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received from the National Association of Counties and Pretrial Justice Institute their publication, Jail Population Management, Elected County Officials' Guide to Pretrial Services.
I'd like to refer this to the Chief Executive Office, Sheriff, and the District Attorney.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We'll acknowledge receipt of these claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports today? Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a comment on the Governor's State of the State address, where he notes that California is not receiving its fair share from the federal government. We certainly can't understand that here in Stanislaus County, as we only receive 11% of our property tax money, far less than other counties get, probably about half as much as some, and far less than the 60% San Francisco County gets to keep of its own property tax money. I just hope that in the future the governor will recognize Stanislaus County's problem with with our funding, since he's got a pretty clear picture of his own, he needs to look at ours.
Thank you. Others? If not, then we'll ask our Chief Executive Officer for a legislative, fiscal, and management report.
If I'd like to provide you just a very brief summary of the Governor's proposed 2010-11 budget, and in this I will just hit the highlights, and Mr. Machado did such an excellent job on the transportation tax component, I will skip that for today. Overall, there's a $19.9 billion shortfall through July 1, 2011, which includes $6.6 billion in our current year and $13.3 billion in fiscal year 2010-11. Many believe this is a conservative number and that the reality will be that the state deficit will be significantly higher than this. Budget proposes to address the gap in a three-pronged approach to include $8.5 billion in cuts, revenue shifts and new revenues of $4.5 billion, and federal funding of $6.9 billion, and I'll speak to that in just a little bit. There are no new tax increases in the proposal, but there is funding in our special for the special 2009 May special election proposed by the governor, overall $68.2 million, so that would be a benefit for Stanislaus County if approved. We did have significant costs in that. The governor's proposal is silent on the Williamson Act, and it does propose to fully fund education. On the cut side, $8.5 billion in spending cuts would be seen in our health and human services, employee compensation, and prisons, including $2.9 billion in cuts to health and human services, $1.8 billion to prisons, and fully believe that our county jails will be significantly impacted by the cuts as proposed by the governor's office. Reduction of $750 million general fund for the implementation of strategies similar to what other states have done to reduce Medi-Cal costs, which would include limits on services and utilization controls, and increased cost sharing through co-payment requirements, premiums, and potentially both co-payment sharing requirements and premiums. In-home supportive services would see a reduction of $77.9 million in 2009-10 and $872 million in the 10-11 budget. Department of Corrections and Rehab would see a reduction in the federal receiver's budget of $811 million. And as you know, this is funding that addresses per inmate medical costs principally, and its oversight responsibility. The funds and shifts in the revenue, $4.5 billion in funding shifts, which would include redirecting Proposition 10 and Prop 63 revenues. This will require a voter approval. The ballot initiative will, if approved, show up on the June 2010 initiative. Increases in revenues from oil drilling and transportation funding swaps. Prop 10 would see a reduction of $550 million through redirection of Prop 10 funding, and would include shifting of for 5 years of approximately 50% of the Prop 10 revenues and one-time sweep of state and local reserves totaling $308 million. Community Health Services would see a reduction of $452 million in general fund substituted with Mental Health Services Act or Prop 63 funding for a portion of the early periodic screening program. This again would require voter approval in June 2010. Cigarette and tobacco surtax, savings of $36 million would be one-time prop from sweeping one-time Prop 99 reserves, and a reduction of $42.7 million in general fund substituted with federal Title 20 funds for our TANF programs. Excuse me. Our children's health coverage see a decrease of $240 million from available proceeds authorized in law and newly enacted hospital fees. The property tax shift fund $350 million in trial court costs with property tax revenues resulting in a comparable level of general fund savings. Transportation funding I will skip for today, as Matt did an excellent job on that. The proposal does include a 4.8% statewide surcharge on residential and commercial property insurances to benefit emergency response initiatives that would provide funding to enhance our state's emergency response capabilities, doing nothing to benefit our local emergency response capabilities. Fund state parks from the use of Tranquillion Ridge oil revenues, which will see some significant environmental opposition. Federal funding, the governor's budget proposes $6.9 billion in federal funds. These funds do not materialize, and the Fed's not forthcoming with $6.9 billion. We'll see increased reductions in our Medicaid program, reimbursement for costs that I won't go into that level of detail. That's a little too much detail. We see elimination of the CalWORKs program, funding for mental health services with Prop 63 in its entirety, so we see no local funding for Prop 63, reduction of Medi-Cal eligibility to minimum allowed under federal law, reducing state employee salaries, eliminating completely the in-home supportive services program, redirecting additional county savings, eliminating non-court required inmate rehabilitation programs, the healthy family programs, funding for enrollment growth at UCs and CSUs and throughout California, number of various of other health care programs, and the list goes on and on. I think the message is that without the $6.9 billion transfer, our entire safety net system would essentially cease to exist as a state-supported system. However, the local responsibility under Welfare and Institutions Code Section 17,000 and other related safety net provisions would continue to exist, and so our responsibilities would not go away along with the funding. That is all we know as of today.
That grim report concludes our public meeting today. We have a closed session scheduled. Mr. Dorian, could you outline that for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session at this conference with legal counsel regarding a significant exposure to litigation involving one case, Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision B. The facts and circumstances surrounding this matter is the county has received a government claim from Michael O'Neill regarding actions taken by the Stanislaus County Retirement Association with support of the county to adjust employer contribution rates. It's uncertain whether there will be any report out on this matter.
This meeting is adjourned.